Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting what you say. Today is the day. Good morning and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for the 22nd of January, where we're talking about so many of the different headlines from a distinctly Christian worldview. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And Tuesday morning at this time means that one of our favorites, Nicole J. Phillips, our kindness expert, joins us to give us a quick story on kindness. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning. I'm no expert, I'll tell you.
You always say that, Nicole. You always offer that disclaimer, you know. So I'm going to keep, though, I'm going to see if we can get this title, this moniker to stick for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. But, yeah, this struggle is real. And I know later on in the show, you're going to talk to somebody about their kids playing Fortnite. Well, I have a solution for the Fortnite problem. Are you ready?
I'm very ready for this. Yes, anything you've got will be helpful.
Kindness. That's the solution to everything. Whatever your problem is, the solution is kindness.
Nicole, I fell right into that trap, Nicole. I fell right into it. It should have been obvious to me, and I fell right in.
I'm so glad you did, or it wouldn't have worked. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. So, what do you got?
I just want to circle back to a story I think I shared before, but it was about... So my dad had a stroke in 2016, and he was in an assisted living center for a full year. And now he is in a wheelchair, very limited mobility, but he gets great pleasure out of looking out of the window. He just the simple things in life. He looks out at God's creation. He sees the birds and eating the bird seed. And he's in Arizona right now. He winters there. So he's watching the flowers, and everything is just, you know, kind of fun and relaxing to him. And so there was a woman in Duluth who had sent me a story of a man named Ted who sat at his window every day in a wheelchair. And the other residents and the people who would come and visit made it a habit to decorate the tree outside Ted's window. So, you know, 4th of July, they've got fun red, white, and blue decorations. And around this time, they've got Christmas lights and in the spring, you know, pretty twinkle lights. And so I was thinking about that as it relates to kids, because my kids are thinking, you know, boy, it would be neat to go volunteer in a senior center, but I don't know if I have that time to commit. And then they worry about, you know, like, what if I don't have anything to say? So I think that can be a nice first step as a family to just say, hey, let's go see if we can sprinkle some bird seed on the snow outside the residence windows and just see what happens with that. And I think that those are the ways that we become, you know, ordinary people who become heroes. It's really just kind of as simple as that.
That's such a great story, Nicole. And this is those simple things that you bring in as you're, you know, the almost expert on kindness that you are. And we really appreciate the stories that you bring in. If listeners want to get some more stories on kindness, where can they go, Nicole? You got a great site for this.
Yeah, braveandkind.net.
Well, we certainly love your voice in the mornings, giving us a little sprinkle of hope and some joy here in the midst of, especially in the middle of winter. So have a great week ahead.
Thanks. You too, Peter. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Absolutely. We'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll be joined by one of our favorites, Dr. David Stevens. And David and I are going to talk a bit about the phenomenon of Fortnite and some suggestions he'll have for parents about how to help us navigate this with our kids.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. It is about 10 minutes past the hour, and we're joined at this time by Dr. David Stevens, who's the CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And Dr. Stevens, I announced earlier this morning, you and I have been chatting off air, but these are my last 8 days as the host of Faith Radio Mornings. I had to step aside just because life with 5 kids and being a business owner and teaching full-time in school, just a bit much to do the show each day, but it's very disappointing. I certainly love to be here, and certainly and especially love speaking with you here on Tuesday mornings like this.
Well, Peter, we're going to miss you too. It's always a joy to be on. It's like getting together with an old friend every couple weeks and sitting down and catching up and talking about important topics. So I want to thank you publicly for all you've contributed to the show and say it's been a joy to work with you.
Well, the feeling is quite mutual. I appreciate that, David. And it won't be the last. I'll be substitute hosting for the different programs here on the radio network and look forward to more times ahead for sure. And certainly our conversations have always been of such interest to me as a parent of 5 kids. And one of those conversations we have from time to time has to do with video game addiction. And boy, Fortnite continues its run through our culture, even through our world, David. I know the first time I saw it was when we were over in Scotland with some friends and the kids were playing it all the time.
Yeah, actually, there are 200 million active users. That's not people just have been on, but people that stay on playing Fortnite across the country. And it's a tremendously addicting game for kids. And, you know, one of the things we have to realize, too, as we talk about this topic, is we set an example for our children. And I picked up an article this week that showed that adults spend 11 hours a day on screen. Now, some of us do a lot of that because we're at work and working on a computer, but then you can come home, turn on the television, you get up in the morning, you're checking the weather, you're checking the news, you check in the stock prices when you get home. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on. And the question I get a lot from parents is, you know, how do I regulate this? I mean, 1 out of 2 parents are having a constant battle with their children over screen time, and it's a big issue, and they are really concerned about how to handle it. And I think one of the keys, Peter, is starting out right. Picked up an excellent book. It's actually written by one of our members who I interviewed this week for our audio magazine, and it's called Loving by Leading. Loving by Leading. It's by Ken Trumbull, and it's a parent's guide to raising healthy and responsible children. And he gets into this pretty well and makes these fairly startling recommendations. Less than 2 years of age, a child in your home should have no screen time, period. All intentional viewing and using it as a pacifier and handing your phone to the child to keep them calm in the grocery store and all those type of things leads to problems later on. And 2 to 6 years, 1/2 to 1 hour a day on weekdays, and that's school time, and about the same on weekends, and then 6 to 12, half hour a day on week during the week, and then 1 to 2 hours on the weekend, and 12 years of age, 1 to 3 hours. And it gets very practical. You know, even in the first 2 years, even the educational variety to put the child down in front of the television is beginning to teach them that that's where they can be soothed. And keep the television off most of the time when the children are up. Don't allow the TV or other small screens in the child's bedroom. As they get older, you actually put the charging stations in a public area and all the kids turn in their electronics at night. Gives you an opportunity to monitor what they've been watching. Put safety on these things. I mean, there's all kinds of just great practical advice on dealing with this, screen issue that we have in town, and that's television, that's iPads, that's smartphones, and all the rest of it. It goes through it year by year, giving recommendations. And there's great studies to show this is important. Kids do better in school. There's less attention deficit disorder, all sorts of things that too much screen time contributes to problems.
Well, David, when you outline the amount of time per age category like that, I would just hazard a guess that that kind of time is quite a bit less than what the average kids in those categories tend to spend. And so if a parent wants to start trying to dialing back the amount of screen when maybe a child has gotten used to a certain amount of screen each day, do you have some practical steps for how you can just sort of incrementally dial it back?
Yeah, I think the key is incrementally and just start and give other stimulating activities. It's much better for a child to be outside playing if the weather's okay or you're participating with them and do active things that catch their attention. And that's getting down on the floor and playing with younger children, putting the blocks up, knocking the blocks down. You know, as the kids get older, horsing around if you're the father with them and wrestling and having a great time and playing tag or whatever. And you cause interaction, you build social skills, sit down and read a book with them, with pictures. Reading is much better for children than handing them a smartphone, because you're not interacting with them, and their imaginations are not being stimulated as much as they are with the book. So you don't want to make your electronics a pacifier for your children, because they'll crave more and more screen time, and in the long run, it's much more unhealthy for them. There's more whining, there's more irritability, there's discontentment. They want it all the time. Electronics are very addictive for young children and teens as well. And we see this, you know, your kids are quite a bit of screen time at home, Peter, and then they head off to college and they're flunking out their first year of college. Why? Because they're in the dorm room playing Fortnite all night. And so teaching them discipline, teaching them that this is a tool, and modeling that to them is extremely important in this day and time.
Yeah, it certainly has an impact. These things aren't neutral, are they, David? I mean, they make an impact in our critical thinking ability. They make an impact in how we perceive and see the world. And so to be immersed in screens like this really does change the way we view the world. And, David, I think about so many parents now that maybe, given the shifts in families that we've seen over the past 40 or 50 years, and a lot of parents maybe didn't have a lot of role models in the generation ahead of them about what to do. And parenting's tough. And so the idea that maybe for a few minutes you can have some peace or a sense of peace because your child is occupied, it's a pretty tempting thing to do, to just put the screen in front of them. Are there things we can do to help empower parents to maybe think of some other strategies with their kids?
Yeah, we can't get into all of them, but I just really want to recommend this book. I mean, it's not anything we published, but Loving by Leading. It gets into everything from children that have trouble eating properly, good sleep, nutrition, the family table. I mean, make a rule in your house that there's no screens on when you sit down for dinner. And the tendency, well, just leave the TV on in the background or whatever. You want to have a conversation. You want to have interaction. I've got one of my members who has a wonderful talk about why there are no Hittites on the streets of New York. You find plenty of Jewish people in New York. Why are the Jews successful and the Hittites were not? And one of the things was the family table. This week, Jody and I watched Fiddler on the Roof, the old movie, and watched them on the Sabbath when they're giving a blessing to the children and talking around the table. And that's why you find Jewish people in New York. You don't find Hittites, because of that passing the blessing on and the family stories and the relationship they have with your children. And that's something that should be protected in our homes as well, because that's when a lot of our mentoring and teaching and how was your day and what problems did you have and conversations going on, and all kinds of just very practical advice in this book, Loving by Leading by Ken Trumbull, that can be very practical for parents at any, their children at any age, and gets into a lot of great things. One of the best books I've ever read on raising kids.
Super helpful. I know, David, when I start feeling insecure around the household about my role as a father, I will just start playing the Tevye card from Fiddler on the Roof and sing Tradition around the house. It doesn't really seem to get me as far as I'd like, but it certainly is a strategy.
Yeah, it's a great story. We went and saw a play here locally. They did Fiddler on the Roof, and it was as good as the movie. And so then we said, well, let's go back and see the movie again. It's been years. That was back when I was in college, back in the early 70s when that came out. So great movie to watch as a family.
Yeah, certainly we can learn from that. We're chatting with Dr. David Stevens this morning about different dimensions of health conversations that might make an impact on us as a family. And when we come back from break, David, it's been a conversation that we follow pretty regularly here on Faith Ready Mornings, and that has to do with abortion and birth control law and some pretty interesting developments out of Tennessee that I want to get your perspective on next here on Faith Radio Mornings.
And how do we keep our balance? That I can tell you in one word: tradition.
Tradition! Tradition! Tradition!
So somehow, David, he seems to sing that a little bit better than I do in my tone-deaf way around the house. I don't understand why, but he probably gets a better response than me.
Well, I can't believe you found that and put it on the air. That's great. That's great.
Yeah, it is. Producer Rachel Sutton. Yeah, she's always on point around here, David. I can throw anything at her, and the next thing we know, we're listening to it.
Yeah, the lead in that, the father is still alive, lives in Israel, a very famous actor. We were actually looking it up this week. He's over 80. and it's performed that in plays all over the world. So it's interesting that it still has that kind of a long run.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I wanted to get your thoughts on here that we cover pretty often on Faith Radio Mornings has to do with ongoing legislation changes around abortion laws, birth control laws. Pretty interesting developments out of Tennessee, where it appears to me that young mothers who are considering an abortion are going to need to be able to see the ultrasound first before they make any final decisions. Do I have that right, or are there different dimensions to this?
No, it absolutely, and actually we live here in Tennessee. That's where I'm based. And if they do an ultrasound, then the patient has a right to see it. And obviously those that abortionists really don't want that to happen, because there's excellent data to show if the mother sees the baby on ultrasound, the vast majority of them make the decision not to go ahead with the abortion. They realize it is a child. It is their baby. And this whole thing that's still said at times, that's just a lump of tissue, it's just cells, you know, it's not really a person, is put to bed. Arizona's got a new law that they have to ask women that are considering abortion if they're being coerced into getting the procedure, and whether they're the victim of sexual assault or sex trafficking. And of course, there's a huge problem with sex trafficking in this country. We live in, you know, a fairly rural area, and there was a sex trafficking ring broke up in our area where they were bringing Latino women in and trafficking them for labor and trafficking for sex. Kansas has a new law not allowing telemedicine abortion. Kansas is such a big state, they were actually prescribing abortion pills by just getting on video and talking to the woman. And that is extremely dangerous when there's no physical exam. You don't, you can't diagnose that there's an ectopic pregnancy or something else that's, so it's going to be a problem if you give the abortion pill. You don't rule out Rh negative disease. That's when the baby has one blood type, the mother another, and the mother actually builds up antibodies and attacks the babies. You can prevent that with Rogram. It's a problem for all future pregnancies if you allow them to get sensitized. So these are big issues. And the abortion industry, guess what? They're fighting all this. They don't want this stuff to happen. They don't want any limitation. They say this is the government getting in between the patient and the doctor. Well, let me tell you something. The government gets in between the patient and the doctor all the time. Mm. And, you know, the informed consent is a law, and you have to give good informed consent. And if you give it inadequately, you can be sued. You could lose your license, all sorts of things. So to say in this area the government should not have some say is pretty ridiculous.
I think it's fascinating, too, the level of details and some of the science that we're learning about just the entire conception and process in the womb and towards birth. And, David, I know when they begin to survey the millennial generation that there's a lot of values in terms of tolerance. There's an ongoing secularization that is moving some of the millennials away from traditional religion. And yet, in the midst of that, you would think that there would be maybe continued progressive ideas on birth control, at least in terms of how progressive has seen and been framed. And yet there's a real shift in millennials that they're increasingly becoming more conservative about abortion ideas.
They are, and it's interesting. There's a great organization that's you know, reaching out to millennials on campus, pro-life organizations on secular campuses, and having a big impact. And millennials are actually projected to be the largest voting bloc pretty soon. And 65% of them say, well, we'd like to vote on abortion issues. Two out of three, we think this should be a state issue and we get to vote on it. Only 7% of millennials in surveys say that there should be no limits on abortion. In other words, you can do it for any reason and be funded by tax dollars. And so this is an issue that they're concerned about. And one of the things that may end up at the Supreme Court and actually change Roe versus Wade and maybe throw it back to the states is a law that Vice President Pence signed when he was governor of Indiana, and essentially not allowing discrimination in abortion on basis of sex, race, or disability. Now you can find out the sex of your child and abort your baby because we want a boy instead of a girl, or the child has some sort of cystic fibrosis Down syndrome, we'll abort the baby for that reason. Or, you know, the most dangerous place for African-American baby, it's not in the inner city, it's being in the mother's womb. Over half of the babies in New York City, African-American women are carrying or aborted. So this law that he passed now is being appealed by the states to the Supreme Court, and saying that you can't discriminate for those reasons. And that may end up putting some limitations on abortion as the Supreme Court has changed. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to watch. We're already so divided as a country. And if abortion gets thrown back to the states, and some states will not allow it and others will, boy, it'd be interesting to see how population shifts in that regard as well.
Absolutely. And I think we're ripe for some changes. And as you say, the trend is changing among the young, and they're really realizing that abortion is not a good, and therefore they're opposed to it, except in the most extreme situations, rape and those type of things. But we need to love children no matter how they were conceived or what disease they have, and to bring them in this world, and they're a gift from God.
Talking with Dr. David Stevens this morning. And David, before we run, I know in the first segment we referenced some a helpful tool around video games and addiction and just raising our kids in general. Can you remind our listeners one more time if they want to catch that, the book that you're suggesting on that topic?
Yeah, Loving by Leading, A Parent's Guide to Raising Healthy and Responsible Children. It's available online on many different book carriers, Amazon and other bookstores. It's by Dr. Den Trumbull, pediatrician in Alabama. I've been in his office. Just you'd wish you had him for your pediatrician if you had kids. He's a wonderful doc.
Well, certainly we love your voice here on Faith Radio Mornings, and though I know it'll be a couple weeks before you're on again, and at that time it'll be a new host, I'm sure I'll be back in studio throughout the year and look forward to the next time we have a chance to chat, David.
I'll try not to be praying that the other people get sick so I can talk to you, okay?
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Have a great week ahead, and we'll take a break here for some Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour news. And I'll be joined by Pastor Kevin Smith next in the second half of this hour. And Kevin and I are going to talk about some of the interesting headlines over the weekend in which some students out of Covington Catholic School met some Native American marchers in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. And there's a lot of different narratives coming out of that situation. So Pastor Smith will help us sort that out next on Faith Radio Mornings. Pretty interesting developments in Kentucky over the weekend, and we see that a heavy police presence is expected outside Covington Catholic High School in Kentucky as protests are planned. The American Indian Movement chapters of Indiana and Kentucky reportedly plan peaceful protests after a Covington student showed up in a viral video wearing a Make America Great Again hat and facing off with Native American activist Nathan Phillips in Washington. And of course, there's been a lot of different narratives coming out in this story, perhaps some misunderstandings. And up next on Faith Radio Mornings, we're going to chat with Pastor Kevin Smith, who's going to help us try to unwind the situation.
It's a common story. Mom and dad enjoy great relationships with their innocent young kids. Everything is going just fine. Then out of nowhere, your teen becomes a monster. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. One moment your family looks like the American dream. The next moment you're spinning out of control and wondering where you failed. So mom, dad, ask yourself this question. Is this really a bad thing? If members of your family are hurting themselves or others, be sure to get help. But if these turbulent times are nothing more than an innocent departure from the family you imagined, you might want to stop and ask the Lord what He's trying to teach you. Broken ideals could be the doorway to an exciting and unexpected future of blessing.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to parentingtodaysteens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
God of mercy, see the
just about 20 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're joined at this time by Pastor Kevin Smith, who pastors New City Fellowship Church in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning.
Great to have you on. I understand it's a little bit chilly in Chattanooga, Tennessee, surprisingly so.
Yes, a little bit chilly, but they lied to me to get me here because I was in Miami, and they told me it didn't get this cold.
So they pulled it over your eye, pulled the wool over your eyes in this, and you get there, and the bait and switch. Have you been able to handle that from a distinctly Christian worldview, Kevin?
yes, I believe God is sovereign. And so therefore, this is all part of his plan for my life.
I love it. Well, thanks for joining us. It was such a fun conversation a couple weeks ago, and wanted to keep into this conversation on racial reconciliation and how we can move forward together, especially in light of Martin Luther King Jr. Day yesterday. Kevin, was there anything specific that you did? I know we try to watch some of the videos with our kids of I Have a Dream speech and read Birmingham jail letters, and also the mountaintop speech is just amazing the night before he died. Were there some ways in which you celebrated yesterday?
Yes, I'm on the board of Covenant College and I look at Mountain, Georgia. So they asked me to come up and moderate a panel discussion. We had Dr. Micah Edmondson from New City Fellowship in Michigan and Grand Rapids. And he spoke on King and King's view of suffering, redemptive suffering. And then I led a panel discussion around that topic. So it was a great time with the kids up there and the faculty.
Yeah, that is a really interesting phrase, redemptive suffering. Suffering is one of those things, Kevin, it seems like to me that especially in Christian circles, we somehow think God is against us if we are suffering and that we have to get out of it as soon as we possibly can to get back to real life. But King certainly had a different view, didn't he?
Yes, he certainly did. And he saw it as God using that to sanctify his people, but also giving us teaching us to love. I mean, that was really what he was really preaching a lot of, was with really this idea of the beloved community and reaching across racial, socioeconomic lines with love and even through suffering, you know, dealing with the injustice, not with hate, not with violence, not with retaliation, neither with acquiescence, but responding to that in love, trusting in the Heavenly Father. So, yeah, following Christ, it was beautiful.
Yeah, I'd love to stay within this topic for just one more minute before we switch to some of the events coming out of Covington Catholic School. But you make that incredible point that redemptive suffering can lead to love. And Kevin, it seems to me, and I would love your perspective on this, that it is the movement towards love of one another that seems to be conspicuously absent so often from our conversations on race and reconciliation. That so often, understandably so, it's about levels of social empowerment because people have been disempowered and oppressed. And there needs to be the social justice aspect. But social justice without love was not what King was advocating for.
Most definitely. He wasn't trying to be politically correct, as some are saying today, but he really was teaching us that loving our neighbor as ourselves really is at the crux of it, because one, loving God's first, but if we truly love God, the love of God is in us. We don't love God because we are so great. We love God because he first loved us, and that love then permeates through our lives to those around us, especially those, as you see in scriptures, especially those who are the poor, the widow, the poor, the orphan, the immigrant who is suffering. I mean, you see this care of those who are less than. And you're so right. In the church, we don't see it because we don't think about what does it mean to love yourself. Now, we all do that. We're never commanded to love ourselves. We do that naturally. And what Jesus is teaching us, the same love that you receive for yourself, that you want for yourself, I want you to give that same love, that dignity, that respect, that care, that kindness, that compassion to those around you. If we did that, brother, we wouldn't be having this discussion.
That's so true. We're hardly ever anchored in love, it seems like, as a first starting point, unfortunately. But we as a church can learn a different way. And I'd be curious your thoughts on what you saw relative to that in some of the events over the weekend at Covington Catholic School. And there was a conflict between some students apparently wearing a Make America Great Again hats, as well as then the Native American marchers who were marching and protesting at that time. And Kevin, I saw bits and pieces of it, but it sounds like there was competing news reports about what happened. And kind of take us into behind the scenes what took place there.
Well, best I can, but you mentioned, you forgot one important group that really started the whole ball, and that was the Black Hebrew Israelites. If you watch the videos, you'll see it starts with them, and they're basically a cult, but a misled. But everything they said was not wrong, but they really started the ball rolling, it seems. And again, we're getting bits and pieces on these videos, but it seems that they were the ones chanting and challenging and really just, you know, calling and using some really rough language at times against white people, against Gad. I think that's who they referred to as the Native Americans, the tribe of Gad. And they started it. The Native Americans came over to confront them, and then it began to boil out bubble out. Now, what you saw there, though, was truly what we were talking about a minute ago, a lack of love coming from the Catholic students. a lack of love, the shouting down, the chanting, the return, maybe even returning evil for evil. But I see also, I see the Hebrew Israelites, and I see the Catholic students, and even the Native Americans, because the Native Americans actually approached the students. The students didn't approach them. The video seems to show them going to confront them. And so you got three groups here, and it just emphasizes once again the real racial disparity, the real racial tension and that exists in our nation. And again, only the gospel can bring the peace that we so desire.
Yeah, and so what is the role in the church in leading the way on this, Kevin? And you as a pastor, are these things you talk about on Sunday mornings at church? Do you have side conversations about this? When you think about how to lead, I know it's a pretty tricky place to be, having been a pastor myself, to think about what does it mean to have a voice in the community and from the pulpit. And people sometimes think, gee, if I enter in these conversations, I'm compromising the gospel for some sort of liberal view of a watered-down gospel. How are you navigating so much of this?
Well, you know, people have a very truncated view of the gospel. We tend to think of the gospel, and this is true now, but we tend to limit it only to this, and that is forgiveness of my personal sins, and I get to go to heaven.
Yeah, for sure.
That's true. Now, that is true, okay? The cross does do that. We can't deny that. But however, when you look at scripture, you see the gospel of the kingdom. You see in Colossians 1 where Jesus reconciles all things to himself, not just one little group of people, but all things are reconciled to Christ. When you look at passages in James, I'm finishing the book of James. You can't read James and not recognize how James is calling the church to care for the widow. What is pure religion? He says, and he talks about caring for the orphan and widow and keeping oneself unspotted from the world. He says pure religion is, we would call, social justice and personal piety. He puts them both together. What we do is we pull them apart and we say true pure religion is personal piety. And that's why we've allowed racism and that's a system now. When we allow racism and then personal prejudice and discrimination, that's why we've allowed all manner of sin to come into the church or to be around the church. Because we've only limited the gospel to personal piety, and we forgot justice is what James is talking about in the Bible. Justice is all, as one pastor said to me, justice is always social. Hmm. You can't pursue justice unless you're doing it socially. And we forget that. And we've given that over to the secular society. The state pursues justice. Christians, no, we have nothing to do with that. I'm sorry, I don't see that in scripture. God punished his people in Israel because of their lack of justice in caring for the poor and caring for those around them. We've fallen for a lie, and we've truncated the gospel, and that's what I teach. The gospel is bigger. It includes, but it's bigger than just your personal ticket to heaven.
I appreciate the thoughts on that, Kevin. I want to get into that a little bit more when we come back for break, where we can maybe bring together our sense of what the gospel is with social programs as well, that they all work together in the same boat. And so more to come with Kevin Smith next year on Faith Radio Mornings. About 9 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, we're chatting with Pastor Kevin Smith about different dimensions of racial reconciliation. And Kevin, you made such important points before the break. I want to keep getting into that a little bit further about how ideas of helping one another and social programs and racial injustice, these things are part and parcel to the gospel. They're not sort of a side program that we do. And when I read the Gospels, Kevin, I see that Jesus not once said that I've come to make sure that you can get into heaven when you die. And of course, that doesn't mean that isn't true. Of course it's true. You and I both affirm that. But he did say some 90 times, follow me. And in following Jesus, we become more and more like him. And boy, where he went, Kevin, he offered love and hope and redemption and healing and all of these different things.
Yes, he did. And he did it to people that his religious contemporaries didn't want him to do. He goes to the Samaritan. He goes to the real quote unquote sinners in the family, the publican, the women caught in adultery. Where was the man, by the way? But I mean, he goes to He goes to these people who are not, who are the unwashed, right? The unclean. They're not like us, in his case, faithful Jewish people. So quote unquote faithful. You know, the Lord's brother is James. Okay. I mean, think about that, growing up with Jesus. And when you read his letter, and I did quote from James 1:27, religion that is pure, undefiled before God the Father is this. What is pure and undefiled religion before God? To visit orphans and widows in their affliction. We will call that social justice. To keep oneself unstained from the world. I refer to that as personal piety. But that's the end of the chapter one. Look how chapter two begins. My brothers, show no partiality as you hold the faith in our Lord Jesus, the Lord of glory. And then he talks about class. A man coming in your, the man comes into your assembly wearing fine clothes. A poor man comes in. Don't pay more attention to the rich man than you do the poor man. I mean, my goodness, he's talking to us. He's talking to us, and he's letting us know that, and the word partiality there for favoritism is, you can apply that more than just social economics. That can refer to race or even gender. Now, when I say gender, I mean male and female here, okay? gender, how we can highlight one gender over another, or we can highlight in our churches in America, we've seen this idea of highlighting throughout the history of our nation, the white community over black community and other communities. And we've done it in the church. King with the civil rights movement would not have been necessary if the church together, all of us together now, I'm not trying to put blame on just one team, but we have to acknowledge that our dominant culture brothers led the way in this and really dropped the ball. Why do we have a black church? We have a black church because African Americans were not welcome. Why did King go to a liberal seminary, Crozer Theological Seminary? Couldn't get into the more quote-unquote conservative seminaries, which I think might have ruined him anyway, but that's another story. I'm just saying, it's in our book. It's in our Bible. If we would just take it seriously and come out of our comfort zones, and that's what it is. I really think we're in our comfort zones. It's much easier for white people to be with white people and for black people like myself to be with black people. It's just much easier.
Talking with Pastor Kevin Smith this morning. Kevin, we just have about a minute and a half left or so, but we talk about bringing back and reconciling between the races. And what role do people who have historically had social or cultural power have in these conversations in terms of making a movement towards? Because we have to recognize that, typically speaking, white people in the country of America have had more social and cultural power. Is there a specific suggestion you have to move towards reconciliation in that situation?
Yes, I do. I mean, when you think about it, there's a door here, but the doorknob is on the side of my white brothers and sisters. The doorknob, you have to open the door, because the racism is a system, and that system, you just can't knock that door down. It's just like the women's suffrage movement. How did white women get the right to vote in this country? They picketed it, they did everything, but how did they finally get it? White men opened the door from the inside and say, hey, you're right. We're convinced. We're letting you in. And that's what needs to happen. Our white brethren need to open the door. And that means pursuing relationships. That means pursuing people who are not like you. That means getting to know people, because that's really what's happening. We really don't know each other so often, and we think we're somehow Martians. And in reality, we're all the same. We're just different melon and different history. We're all the same, and we need to begin to pursue love across those lines. That means relationships. That means churches doing work in their community, broader community, getting to know the history. If you're a congregation and the neighborhood's changed, it's been a white church maybe, and the neighborhood's starting to change. Don't leave. Don't move your church. Engage that community. Learn their stories. Talk to people. There's always somebody in those communities who's going to become like the historian. He can tell you, go and sit at their feet. Go and learn. Go and listen. Get to know people. I think that's key. That's really key. And again, there's so much things we could say about this, but it really comes down to us being willing to get to know each other, to engage one another, to hear each other's story. To not deny my story when I tell you. I feel very uncomfortable here because I feel like you guys don't care. Don't deny that. when I say, as a black man, I say to you, hey, this person is really, really having difficulties with me because I'm black. Don't poo-poo that. Don't deny that. Enter into that. Weep with those who weep, the Bible says. Now, that's another important thing. Weeping with your minority brothers who are suffering, who are telling you they're suffering. You may not agree with everything, but you enter into their suffering and weep with them. When we start weeping together, brother, I'm telling you, that's when the love is going to flow, and Christ's love, and we're going to begin to enter into each other's lives, and this barrier is going to start coming down.
Pastor Smith, I love the wisdom and the anchored insight that you provide in this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings, and stay warm in Chattanooga today.
I will try. Thank you, brother.
That's great. Well, that'll take us to the end of our show here for Faith Radio Mornings on the 22nd of January. And Rachel Sutton, our producer, these are the conversations that we have with people like Pastor Smith. I know I announced this morning that this is sort of the end of the run for me as the Faith Radio Mornings host. Wrap it up on the 31st of January, simply because I've got 5 kids at home that I really am missing in these mornings like this, and have a business to run and also teaching to do. So stepping aside, but I'll miss these kind of great conversations with Pastor Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so important to recognize those things in life. And we're excited for you as you take your next steps as well.
Appreciate it. Thanks for listening. As always, I will miss you all as listeners. So fun to talk with you as I meet you in person around churches in our city as well. And look forward to tomorrow as we step into the morning again here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.